What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either.
Really.
Say scratch that again.
Scratch that again.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friend.
Happy Monday. Today, we're going to talk about one of my favorite things to get on a soapbox about. I feel like I might be insufferable. So I just want to preface this with, like, I have had encounters with parents who are like, just buck up, just do it, just create the routine, just like potty train. I don't know, where they make things that are really difficult for me sound easy, and that, like, it's just having discipline. And I hate them. And I wish stubbed toes and perpetually cold coffee on them. So I hope that that is not the angle that this takes, but I do get a little soapboxy and I do have big feelings about this topic, which is modifying your pre-child rituals, interests, hobbies, practices to fit your life now instead of just giving them up and becoming a miserable, horrible human being.
Spicy!
Oh, I have so much spice. Nothing peeves me more. I have so much compassion for this, and I love talking about it. When people refuse to get out of this, like, self-sabotaged, like, pity party, I can't do anything because I have a kid now and there's no time. And I think it's the refusal to let go of what was and to reimagine it in a new way, because there is not time. There is not time. Pre-kids, it's just, there's no way, even with all the variables of who has access to what childcare, like, there just is not, you do not have the same luxury.
So that I know that people you're imagining, this is people who are like, I had kids and now I don't feel like myself, or I'm not creative in the way I used to be, or like, I don't feel connected to my spouse in the way that I used to be. Or are these all things applicable?
Yeah, I think where my spice, when I feel spicy, is I think mostly around like hobbies or creative practices, where people just like martyr the interesting parts of themselves and then complain about it, but refuse to modify or adapt the things about themselves that make them interesting and cool.
Well, I'll just be the person in the room that keeps saying, but Caitlin, I'm so tired. And we'll make a perfect little soup together. What is helpful about what you're offering is less about like, buck up, come on, you stop just like sabotaging yourself. I think it's more like, this is possible, and let me help you imagine how this might be more possible than you think that it is.
Yeah, I think the warm side of this that is not like a spicy, maybe a little bit of an asshole, it makes me so sad and devastated to see someone become a shadow of themselves because they lost this, their like spark, their like creativity, their interest, their weird thing. The thing is that they love, that lights them up. Watching that go out of someone and then blaming it on their kids, the thing I cannot stand for is when people do this and like directly name their kids as the reason, like in front of them, especially when the kids are older. I just feel so much rage about it. And I don't have any trauma associated with this or something. It's just like, this is my soapbox. It's the thing that I feel so committed to. When I think about the relationship I want to build with Charlie and how I want him to see me, and I just know that I'm a shitty parent when I'm not taking care of myself. And one of the ways we take care of ourselves is by doing whatever weird shit it is that we love to do.
Mm-hmm. And so you're thinking about ways to ways to make that happen, even as we know that like time is completely different than the things we had access to before.
How to do that within your current reality? Like, what is real? What is true for you right now?
That's applicable beyond kids. I mean, I'm thinking like before we had a kid, I remember Micah went from a part-time job to like the traditional like 9-to-5 job, and it made him feel like his soul was murdered. And so that, I mean, this takes a lot of shapes for us. It's like change, and like finding ways to hold on to our humanness despite a big massive shift in identity or schedule or time or whatever.
I went back on my Instagram in some stories that I had saved. This is from 2022, so 3 years ago. I was talking about creativity. And so I gave them an example. I pulled these images because I felt like it was such a good example of this. So I'm going to read you what my pre-parenthood morning routine was, just to like add context. I live for a quiet morning. This is not a discipline. It is not hard for me. It is easy and it is joyful. This is when I find my like alone time, my spiritual well-being, my creativity flow. But for anyone who's like struggles to get out of bed in the morning, I just don't. I just wake up ready to go. I also don't function after 7 p.m. Like, do not ask me to do anything. Leaving my house, I like to be in bed by 9. So I just feel like there's so much moralizing of waking up early. And I just want to be so clear that I've done this since I was a baby. So pre-parenthood, wake up around 5.
Oh my gosh.
I love it. There's no thrill like waking up before the sun or anyone else is shaking around. It is, I love it. But it came easily. Like, I would do this without an alarm. Okay. I was not struggling. I was not suffering for this.
And for anyone whose natural wake up time is 10, I also see that's, I'm with you.
And we need you, because who is going to keep the midnight watch? You know?
No. I also like 9 o'clock bedtimes, Caitlin.
And I think that is beautiful and fine. Okay. So I'd wake up at 5. I would make my tea. I put on here, have a quiet morning pee, because that is no longer. I would stretch. I would do yoga, light candles, pull tarot, do my morning pages, do a blind drawing of myself, read, and take a shower all by myself. This is like a 2-hour morning ritual. Okay. So I would be wrapping this up as Andrew would be like getting up to get ready to think about work. Okay. As of 3 years ago, which my routine is a little different now, but this is what I wrote down.
Sorry. This is when Charlie was about 2.
Yes. So I'd wake up between 6 and 7, usually because he was waking or something. I was usually still tired and not wanting to get up. Get him a fresh diaper. I would pee while holding him, make him a bottle. I would try and make tea, but often end up drinking like a pre-mixed like chai something from the fridge. Wrangle him into the stroller, take a walk, listen to a podcast or book, and then come back and have breakfast, take my medicine, and do my blind drawing of myself. So what the first thing that I want to call out here is how I was modifying and layering the practices. So stretching and doing yoga with a 2-year-old was like not doable. I can do that now with him. But it has been a journey to get him to like leave me alone to like be on a yoga mat. So I layered them and I got underneath it. What was it about the stretching and the yoga? Part of it was just like the stillness with myself and breathing, but I needed to move my body in the morning. And then the reading was like waking up my brain, having some intellectual moment. So going for a walk and listening to an audiobook or a podcast fulfilled that need and also fit into what was actually functional for our life. The walk met the need to move my body, and the audiobook or podcast met that need for like intellectual stimulation in the morning. So those were things I modified and layered. What did I keep? I kept the blind drawing of myself. It was like a 30-second to a minute practice, felt really important, but I modified it. Instead of sitting at my altar space with my mirror and my sketchbooks and tarot and all of that, this is when I switched my pill case to have a mirror in it, and I kept my notebook by my pill case on the kitchen counter. Way less romantic, way less like thrilling. And also still I checked in with myself. So I had to like pull that practice back. And then I wasn't like brewing loose leaf tea. I like went and bought pre-made stuff. So here is like, how do you accommodate yourself? Like what accommodations do you need? And all this takes like so much thinking and thought. And I don't want to discount like how much work it is to do this. And it took me like 2 years to like come into a good rhythm. What I'm really proud of is my ability to like pause and see what is really important. What is missing? Where do I feel resentful? Where am I like losing myself? And then figure out what was fulfilling that before. What's the reality? What are the constraints of my actual lived experience right now? And how do I either modify and layer, keep the thing that works, or like create accommodations for myself?
It sounds like part of the practice is also like figuring out what you need. I'm curious how you figured that out. Was that like trial and error, or like, because the pre-baby 2 hour ritual feels like it's got a lot of specific little notes in it. And like, how did you figure out that those were the things you needed to begin with?
Oh, like how did I craft the pre-parent ritual?
Yeah. Like, how do you know what you need? How did you know you needed to move your body? Maybe this is like a silly question from someone who's very not in tune with their own needs.
I spent a lot of time trying different stuff. This was all built out of like just necessity to like calm anxiety. I used to just wake up with like raging out of control anxiety, which is part of why I wake up so early, because my brain just like wakes up screaming at me and then I have to go and like calm it down. So a lot of these practices are created out of like sheer just like desperation to figure out how to tend to myself so that I can be a relatively normal person the rest of the day, which I think is what has been so hard about becoming a parent, is that I don't have 2 hours of uninterrupted time in the morning. And also I don't wake up at 5 a.m. anymore. And like, I mean, sometimes, but that's not like a regular, and I don't set an alarm for it or try and make myself do that because I'm fucking tired and I want to sleep until.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I miss this. Like, this was so generative. This is when I created a lot of work. This fed me in ways that like I'm not getting fed. Now, my mornings look really different. Like Charlie and I almost always wake up together. He's like grumpy, needs cuddles. I was trying to do yoga in the morning, but I've switched it to nighttime because that's when he does quiet play and needs a little less of me. Currently, my rituals feel all out of whack because pregnancy has just like disrupted my sleep and my morning, and everything feels weird. So I'm in like a limbo space, I feel like, right now. And this will all shift again with baby. So it's like holding this really lightly. But what I do know is that I have the capacity to keep modifying and layering and finding what's working. And so getting underneath like what actually matters to you. Like, I'm not going to get up and make scrambled eggs and sausage and smoothies in the morning. Like, we're eating toast or cereal or like drinkable yogurt, prepackaged breakfast bars. What matters to me is that my morning could seem as like quiet and seamless. I do so much prepackaged food because I don't want to waste my time doing other stuff. I'm not filling up my schedule that's going to take time away from what is most important, which is me having solitude, quiet. That's one of the most important things that I need in my life. And so I'm constantly looking for accommodations or ways that I can modify what we have. And so I think like to go back, you have to go backwards and figure out like what are your values, what matters most to you. And I think you have to keep digging under it because there's so much pressure societally to perform parenting in this really specific way. And it's exhausting. It like exhausts you beyond just like the reality of like caring for another person can be really taxing. But then when you layer all these other expectations and stuff on top of it, no wonder everyone's miserable and no one's remembering to like tend to their weird hobby or something.
So I feel like this is a conversation about prioritizing the things that make you you in the midst of what often feels like like survival mode. Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Finding ways to create or fortify the tether between you and the things that make you you, or the like finding ways to, what is it, like ground yourself or prioritize yourself in some ways.
Yeah. It's about, I think, getting really honest about what you're missing, whatever the shift is, whether it's kids or something else. Like, what is the thing they're missing? Writing it down. And then getting really clear about what you have access to in this moment. And I miss going out and drinking and staying out late and being so carefree and staying out all hours of night. That's just like not, I'm not going to do that for years. Maybe I would do that like once every 6 months or something. So just being honest about, there's certain things that I miss. I really miss jumping on a plane and just like going to visit friends, or like seeing something that I'm curious in and just like running off to do it. Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
So do you find that you are finding other ways to, are you pivoting to fulfill those needs in other ways? Or are there those things that you're just letting go or shedding? Or how do you think about that part of the pivot?
I feel like it's a mixture. I think I'm way more choosy about the things that I do or take on. I've realized in the last few years that attending live music is really important to me. And so I've been trying to seek that out more often. And that's something I can do locally. It's something that I could do like once every few months. And it's like one night away. It feels accessible versus like that fills me up in a way that like, it's a taste of like jumping in the car and taking myself on a solo road trip a few hours away to like see someone and have like a solo moment by myself.
You're like creating a bite-sized version of something that you used to have like the whole pie for.
Yeah. So some of it I think is acceptance. And I'm not saying I couldn't be jumping on planes and going places if I set up my like childcare correctly. But the way that our finances are arranged and other values that I have, that thing I'm missing just isn't, it's like lowered on the priority list. If that's your top priority, I bet you could make how to make it work.
Yeah.
It's a mixture of accepting that this is a season and that it will come back around. Like, I will get back to applying to residencies or like traveling around. That feels like it will come back. This is not that season. So it's a mix of like accepting that and like setting some things aside, and then being really embodying that like trickster energy, this like resistance. I refuse to be miserable or to like not have the things that make me feel like me, and finding a way to do that in these like bite-sized pieces.
I am finding myself as you're talking, thinking a lot about this book that I just finished reading this morning. By Mike Birbiglia and his wife, Jay Hope Stein. It's called New One, and it is about the transition that they experience becoming parents. And they are this couple. Mike Birbiglia is a stand-up comedian and like filmmaker, and Jay Hope Stein is a poet. And they had come together as a couple with the agreement that they would never have kids, in part because of what you're describing, is like everyone they knew who became parents was just turned into like mushy, boring people, and like everything they loved about these people before they were parents was gone through this transformation of parenthood, and they were like, we will never become that. And then Jen, Mike Birbiglia's wife, actually wanted to become a parent. And Mike Birbiglia did not want to become a parent, but they, Jen kept saying, like, nothing is going to change. We'll be the kinds of parents that, like, do this without it disrupt. We, like, we'll stay ourselves and nothing will change. We'll just, like, weave this child seamlessly into the thing that we already are. And yeah, like, spoiler, it doesn't go that way for them. And I think that's part of what's interesting to me about this, that, like, this prompt or question of, like, how do you remain yourself and, like, what are the things you can do to hold on to that person is in part, like, I think for many people, the experience of parenthood or whatever the big shift is, maybe it's like partnering with someone, or maybe it's a new job, or maybe it's moving somewhere else, or whatever it is, in some ways, like, changes us profoundly. Like, we actually are kind of different people. And I wonder if that's part of the puzzle of what makes it hard is, like, maybe I don't even know what I need anymore. Or maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but, like, as someone who finds it difficult in some ways to know big picture, like, what I need, and being partnered with someone who really doesn't know what he needs, I that seems like part of the struggle. So, like, what do you have to say to someone who is, like, looking at their life and everything is so different? It's almost unrecognizable. The landscape is almost unrecognizable. Not only the landscape, but me, the person, feels so foreign or different or new. Where do you start figuring out what it is that you need?
I would look at where you're feeling resentful.
Mm.
Like, you get invited to do something and it doesn't work in your life and you feel really pissed off. Or just, like, what are you sad about? What do you miss? Like, when you look back, what are the things that you don't recognize about yourself? What has fallen away? But for me, usually, I like to pay attention to where, when I'm regularly feeling pissed off or resentment or, like, pushing something down. But also, like, could you look back and take an inventory of, like, what did you have before? Who were you before? And then maybe make a list of who you are now. Like, what feels incongruent, or, like, where's their resistance? And I don't think it's, like, an overnight process. I think it's a lot of, for me, it definitely hasn't been. And I'm just, like, deeply reflective. Like, pre-kids, I was constantly evaluating. Okay, Rebecca, are there moments where you just, like, want to do something, or you miss something and you, not like you resent Otto, but, like, you're just, like, resent or, like, notice that it's because of the way your life is now?
I feel like I resent my brain. I feel like, well, and this is, okay, so this is, like, one of my other questions for you is, like, you said, like, what do you miss? And I'm thinking about this for me, and I'm thinking about this for Micah too, as my partner, like, to create, like, creative people. And I feel like for both of us, we have, like, tried in different ways to really, like, carve out space to create the kinds of things we liked creating before we became parents. And it just hasn't felt the same, even with, like, a good chunk of time. It's like, it's that feeling of, like, it's not just, like, I'm not prioritizing being a creative person. It's like, am I just, like, not a creative person anymore? Like, why is having the space to sit down and make something not generating the way that it used to? Why am I just, like, a blank brain? Why are the ideas not coming out of me the way that I remembered that they used to? It feels like you can create a container for creativity, but, like, what does it mean if nothing comes out?
What were the things you were doing outside of that container to create that were generating your ideas? Like, where did those ideas or things come from?
I think for me, when I was in grad school, which is, like, the phase I'm thinking of, like, before becoming a parent, what was happening. When I was in grad school, I just had, like, an explosion of ideas because I was, like, learning new content that was, like, having me rethink my whole life. And like a million stories were tumbling out of me because I had a new lens. And I think in some ways I like churned through that lens where it's like it's not generating newness in the way that it did before. But like I think also for me, like the true answer is also like I have a lot of ideas and then I get really frozen in actually making them and feel like really in my head about. And I think some of that is like time and feeling like I only have so much time. I've got to choose the right thing and I've got to, you know, like I can't waste this time. I have to, the thing that I make has to be right. And how do I know what that right thing is? And so I can get really in my head and like caught in that.
That is like, oh, that is one of my number one struggles. And I am not, I don't know how to get out of that.
Okay, cool.
In terms of my like creative, like just my creative practice feels so different now. And mine is about time, but it's also about money.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Anything that I'm doing, if it's not generating money, I'm like, this is a waste of my fucking time because my time is so, so incredibly limited. I used, like, I would often spend 9 to 12 hours in my studio multiple days a week. And I just made so much stuff and I was so prolific because there was not, it was, didn't have to be precious. Like I could just dick around and make whatever I wanted. And often really cool stuff came out of that.
And if only 30% of that generated income, then that was fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I just like, I worked more jobs. I had the time to work as much as I needed to and then to make whatever work I wanted to on the outside. And the ways that I'm currently, and I know this is going to shift when baby comes, the ways I'm currently trying to combat that is like pulling out, integrating that like dicking around art making time when I'm with Charlie, doing a body map when we're hanging out together. Lately, I just feel compelled to be like painting and drawing flowers all the time, which is not something that's been a part of my practice. And so I have all those materials laid out in the house where we do our like play time together. And I think we all know that I hate playing cards or like doing whatever with him. So we've really worked on like, what's it called? Oh, like parallel play, where I will dip in and out of his play, but I cannot do that for a sustained amount of time. It bores me to tears. And so then I'm doing my thing right next to him. And he's always welcome to join me or to show me what he's doing. But I couldn't, that didn't work really well even like a year ago. It's only recently that he can really get caught in a flow all by himself or like do something next to me or like not just come over and like bug the shit out of me while I'm trying to do something. So this is a new era and it's going to be brief, short-lived because soon I'm going to have a baby like hanging off of me and everything's going to feel different. I'm going to have to modify it.
But that, and that feels so much like life. Like so much of this is life always shifting and ebbing and flowing. And even if you weren't having a second baby, it feels like that just feels like part of the cycle of things.
I think that's where my like spicy hot take on this comes from is that there's this, I feel like it's extra potent around having a kid where there's this like this resistance to change or this like resentment or like, I really struggle identifying with parents who are just like, not that we don't come in and out of moments of this because I definitely do, but who's kind of like MO is just being like, well, my life is over because I'm just carpool person now or like, and it just seems, it makes me so sad for that person, for their kid and for their relationship.
I think parenting is definitely one strand of this, but in some ways it's making me think that like a lot of this feels cultural. I think that there is like culturally this mandate that like if you're not making money with this thing, what are you doing? I think that as you're talking about this, I'm just kind of thinking about all of us in the world that we live in right now. And there's the piece of it that's like, why would I create anything when there's so much suffering and big chaos in the world and like my little thing feels unimportant. I mean, I feel like there's lots of things that keep us from.
Oh, there's so many layers. And I think there's a real grief in like whatever thing you used to love to do, like, did you love to go to midnight releases and play video games all night? Or like, did you love to go on big, long solo birding hikes or whatever? And like, that has to now be modified. Like, there is a grief in that. Like, and also, I know that a lot of the like hobbies, practices, things that I've created for myself are specifically geared towards my mental health. And I think for most people, the things that you do for joy or fun are like benefiting your mental health. But I just feel like so drawn, like this feels so important to me on like many, many levels. I just don't ever want to be the person who like turns into an asshole or is grumpy or terrible because they weren't prioritizing tending to themselves. And I think in our culture and the way that we move through the world, like this stuff is viewed as like frivolous or like not that important. And I think it's actually one of the most key important things.
It's how it's the reason like all the humanities programs are getting cut in colleges. It's like, this is extra. This is like, this is icing as opposed to like, this is water.
And I soak in shame because my house is messy and I don't make home cooked stuff. Like, there are so many things that I let go of so that I can be doing this, like sitting around the fire with Charlie and reading in the evening after like spending the day, like tramping through a forest and just like feeling the sun on my face. The flip side of that is that I'm not out pulling weeds. Like, my yard doesn't look good. My house is kind of shitty. And those things bring me quite a bit of shame. And some of it is like, I want to be doing those things more and integrating them. And some of it is just like, I got to let go of whatever thing I've decided is the way that you adult in regards to keeping house or like a perfect yard. And I just like, I ruthlessly let go of things that are not actually important because you cannot do it all. And so I think a huge piece of this is letting go of.
Well, yeah. And it feels like that comes back to our forever theme of script writing is like, it sounds like what you are pushing against is this default way that like, once maybe we become these adult people or parents is that we end up sort of like being handed our priorities of like what we should be enacting as opposed to like, what is actually important to you and how can you craft a script that reflects the things that will make you feel alive. And that might look really different, especially from the outside when people drive by your house. That might look really different than what you've been inherited or believed that was supposed to be important to you.
And it's going to, personally, it's going to look different than what you were doing before, like how it was pre whatever, like big shift. Having the like flexibility, the tenacity, the trickster, whatever you want to call it, energy to adapt and to like pull this thing along with you and like this stubborn gladness and your ability to like let go of expectations or what other people might think it's supposed to look like because you're prioritizing something that is so not like celebrated or seen as important.
I think that you have in mind like the people who had a creative practice before parenting and like how to pivot from or you know whatever the transition is, like you had something established and then this big transition happened and you have to rebuild it or adapt it. And I think I keep thinking about the people who haven't had a creative practice since they were like 7, you know, like I feel like there's so many people for all these different reasons where that like that making, creating, storytelling, playful, like whatever the thing is, like, I think we lose it for so many reasons along the way. And the person who maintains that into any kind of adulthood is rare. And then being able to continue to hold on to that as those pivots keep getting thrown at you just gets almost like, it feels like unless you're being very mindful and intentional, like viciously intentional, like you will lose it, it feels like. It's like the stuff that like nobody is asking you to do and nobody is knocking on your door saying like, why haven't you done this thing?
Yep. Which is why it's so easy to let it fall away and then to just accept that that's how it's supposed to be. Stop accepting that things have to suck or that you
that you're altruistic for letting it go.
Yes. I think that is the biggest bullshit lie of all time, especially in regards to parenting. And obviously, I'm not talking about people who are like neglecting their kids and out like gambling all day or whatever.
That's what I heard. I was saying go to the casinos.
But they're like the pendulum swing of like being a good parent and always like centering your kid and like being this martyr and like bowing down to their every need. I don't think it's good for either of you.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's making me think about teaching for some reason and how like teaching and parenting will fill up every single possible millimeter of inch that you allow it to. And like in teaching, it can be like endless grading. It can be like parent emails and faculty meetings. And then you think about like the actual point of what is that you want to offer as a teacher and like the experience you want to create and like the kind of thing you want to model for those students. And like, how do you stay alive as a teacher as opposed to getting crushed by the tedium of just the logistics? And it's so easy to get crushed by all of the stuff that we feel like we have to get done.
What I hope that people listening to this would take away is as though we're like hanging out over coffee or a glass of wine, and I'm just giving you unending permission to go do the thing that you want to do, even if it feels frivolous or not important. And also like a little friendly kick in the asshole to be like, stop accepting misery. Just because you can't do like 4 hours of this thing doesn't mean you couldn't do 30 minutes. And grieve that. Grieve that lost time. I'm not saying to like Pollyanna this shit or to like pretend that it's not hard, or like get upset, throw a fit, have a tantrum. That's fine. And then like brush yourself back off and get up and go find like whatever scraps of joy and resist the like conforming to like that you have to be miserable and slog through. I just don't accept it. It's uninteresting to me. It's super boring.
It's making me think of our Maria Bowler episode too. Pay attention to what's alive in you.
And what is true in this moment? Like what is true right now in this moment is different than it was a year ago for me. It's different than it's going to be in 6 months for me. And so it's just like constantly being awake to that, like pivoting, adapting, being this like wily little coyote who is just like ragingly seeking pleasure and joy.
That's the print I want. Ragingly seeking pleasure and joy. I really like the combination of those words.
Just like let your, specifically to parents, like let your kids see you doing the thing you love and taking time away from them to do that thing and then, and also integrating them into it.
Yeah, I really like that layering. That layering picture. Layering is a word I heard you use in this episode, and the layering of like you're with Charlie, you're caring for Charlie, but you're also tending to this creative impulse, and you can do that alongside each other. And where it might be typical to think like I'm in parenting mode, I'm going to tidy this thing, or I'm going to prep these meals, or I'm going to, you know, whatever. Be like, actually, I can just make my art next to him. All right, so. Dear listeners, our prompt and invitation is pay attention to what's alive in you.
Yeah, and maybe actually write down like what it used to feel like, what you're missing, and then write down what are the realities and constraints of your life now, and then look at that previous list and how do you modify and adapt and accommodate those things? How do you layer and shift them around? Elizabeth Gilbert in Big Magic talks about having an affair with your work. And it has stuck with me for so long because even when you don't have time, you find time to do the thing that you really want to do. And so identify the thing that you really love and want to do, and then just like sneak out with it. Put something else on your calendar. Be a sneaky little freak about it. Do you need to go sit on a rock by water and like hum to yourself? Fine. Say that you're grocery shopping and just like do that on the way to the grocery store. Whatever you need to do to integrate that thing in, don't be afraid to like sneak around to get it if you need to.
Elizabeth Gilbert, I remember from that section, she talks about like putting on lipstick to go to do something creative. It's like that signal to yourself, like, this is extra special. It's important. You're not just being a selfish little frivolous little. It's important work.
I love you.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
This podcast is edited and perfected by the most beautiful wizard and my favorite dude, Micah Jones.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.